Welcome to the Hunter's Advantage Podcast, where a group of budget-minded hunters scour the woods for whitetail bucks and whatever other big game is in season. Tune in each week to hear the hilarious public and private land hunting stories and mistake-filled lessons learned. We believe that every hunt brings us closer to God and that we exist to share the good news. And now, your hosts, Christian Babcock and Jake Gaylord.
Listen, guys, we wouldn't be able to do the podcast if it wasn't for you all. So we just want to say that you guys are greatly appreciated and thank you for following along each week.
And speaking of support, we are partnered with Out on a Limb Manufacturing. And I can tell you from firsthand experience, Matt and Chase are great down-to-earth guys, and they make some of the best saddle hunting products out there. Whether you're looking for a set of climbing sticks or a mobile, lightweight hang-on tree stand, or maybe you're even a one-sticker.
You mean tree Pilates?
Yes, tree Pilates. If you've been to the grocery store or the gas station lately, you know that Uncle Joe is doing his absolute worst to take all your money. That's why we need hunting gear that lasts year after year. And trust me, I've been rocking the same Out on a Limb Shikar climbing sticks for 4 years and the Ridge Runner 2.0 saddle hunting platform for a few years as well. This gear is built to last.
We can confidently say that Out on a Limb is the best bang for your buck.
And it's the best gear if you want to deflate a big old buck.
Ooh. Make sure you use code HNTA15 at outonalimbmfg.com. for 15% off anything on their website.
So if you can show them the same support that you guys show us, please go to outonalimbmfg.com and use code HNTA15 for 15% off at checkout. Now let's get back to the podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Hunter's Advantage Podcast. Today, we are joined by a special guest, Ethan Kyle. Thanks for jumping on with us, man. We're looking forward to talking to you.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. So if people have been living under a rock or they just don't get on Facebook or North American Whitetail or anywhere else, they haven't seen your buck. But for people that do tune into everything that's going on in the whitetail world, you shot a close to 230-inch buck down in South Central Oklahoma. I don't know how you ever mentioned the location. That's pretty bold. But but yeah, that's pretty cool. That's probably where people would know you from. But like what we wanted to do to start out the conversation was obviously your big buck slayer. I can see that from the buck behind you and the ones up on the wall, about 10 foot up there. But where we wanted to start was kind of upbringing and hunting background. Have you always been a bow hunter? Kind of how did you get involved? And I know you grew up in Oklahoma like us, so there's not much else to do, but how'd you kind of get into all this?
I've said this before, and I tell everybody that I talk to about hunting. I didn't really have much of a choice. My parents were lucky enough; they purchased my lifetime hunting and fishing combo when I was 6 months old. So I didn't have any choice in the matter. I was pretty much pushed into it from the time I could walk, and I've loved every minute of it. I mean, there's nothing I don't do. As far as in the outdoors, from fishing, noodling to hunting every season of the year. I don't discriminate against anything as far as the outdoors go.
Not even crossbows or anything like that?
Oh my God. It's where we're going right there. Right off the bat, here we go.
I'm just messing with you. I'm just messing with you.
I tell my dad hunts with a crossbow, but he's had a couple of shoulder surgeries, so he gets a pass, but crossbow actually blew up on him preseason last year, and I was like, well, I guess you got to use your the big boy bow now.
That's awesome.
Because he has old Matthews he hunted with before, but I said, yeah, I guess you got to use the big boy bow now.
That's funny.
No, I do just want to throw this out there. I am just kidding about all the crossbow stuff. I mean, I know this is our first time meeting, and I'm pretty aggressive on that type of front, but I just want you to know I don't really care.
I don't care either.
Okay, good deal. I was just going to ask, and I know we're going to get into that buck here sooner, but how many messages did you get saying, oh, you definitely shot that from a high fence deer? Because by looking at it immediately, I'm like, oh, that 9 foot, 10 foot fence all day again.
Oh yeah, that was literally like probably the first, I don't know, probably every other comment on every Facebook post about it, mm-hmm, was, either high fenced or got out of high fence. and I promise you, I got witnesses and taxidermists to back me. There's no ear. There's no hole in the ear. So we're good there.
Hey, that's all that matters.
No, I mean, we were talking about being equal opportunists. So what you kind of you're a guy that noodles in the summer, shoots turkeys, you do all that sort of stuff?
Yes, I enjoy every bit of it. I mean, from predator hunting in the wintertime to turkeys and archery, rifle. I got the opportunity to go to Colorado when I was young. We had a lease in Colorado. My parents did, or actually a couple of my dad's friends had a lease, and I was walking up there and walking beside him at 4 or 5 years old in Colorado. So yeah, I don't discriminate against any type of hunting or any type of outdoor activities. I'm all about it.
Yeah, that's awesome. That reminds me of my Uncle Justin. He's like, he said, I don't discriminate. I'm an equal opportunity hunter. Whatever walks out in front of me, whether it's a pig, a coyote, it doesn't matter. If I got a weapon in my hand, it's time. It's go time.
If I'm hunting and a pig walks out, it's pig season.
Oh, it's a sin not to shoot those things.
Do you get quite a bit where you're at?
Oh man, and all of my trail cam pictures of this deer, if you notice, there's panels around my feeder. And that's because I've had to put two feeders up on that property because the pigs knocked it over and tore it up. So finally got tired of buying feeders and just bought panels.
Do you hunt them with thermals or anything like that?
Yes. I've recently sold it kind of around here. They actually, it's good reason. You know, the pig population got a big dent put in it. And I traded my thermal off, but I did run a thermal for a while, and man, that was a blast.
I know it doesn't put in a dent in them shooting them with a bow, but there's no more fun than shooting with. I love, like, we hunt all over. We hunt the southern portion of Oklahoma all over too, and you shoot one, and when you hit them in the air, you see the freaking dust come off of them. Oh, like, yeah. Oh, that is a nasty sucker. Like, I mean. Because we got those nice 4K cameras that we film hunts with, and you hit them, and it's like a dust cloud. Poof, it's awesome.
Man, it only gets about halfway in.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right. They're a tough creature. I mean, there's no wonder why there's millions of them. I mean, it's so hard to kill them, even with a gun or a bow. Much less, I mean, they don't really have any predators outside of the two or three mountain lions we have in the state, allegedly. But we'll. I mean, there's outside of people with thermals, man, there's nothing putting a dent in that population.
No, I'm curious. I keep I-35 hot and 69 hot driving. I live in Central Texas now, so I'm always driving up and through Oklahoma. But so I when I think of where you're talking about in Southern Central Oklahoma, there's kind of some interesting stuff going on there. You just get over the border a little bit. You got some up and down and some topography, and you got out of near the Falls Creek Church camp. I don't remember where's that at? What town is that?
Davis, Oklahoma.
Davis, that's what it is. It gets real pretty and like kind of waterfalls and up and down. Like, is that similar to the terrain that you're hunting, or is it something a little different?
No, I'm actually west of Davis a little ways and northwest of Davis. I have a lot of friends from Davis, matter of fact, and I actually have a lease down close to Davis, just a few miles west of there is my other hunting property. But yeah, and it changes so fast, just where I'm at, where this deer came from. It's really just pasture land with a few blocks of timber. And then you go 10 miles south, and then you're in big rolling hills, getting closer to the Arbuckle Mountains. And then my buddy, he has a lease there right by I-35, and he's got elk on his lease right there.
Cool.
in the mountains. So man, it changes so fast. Just, you know, in 15 minutes, you go from pastures to mountains.
Yeah, that's Oklahoma's awesome. A very diverse state. I don't think a lot of other people realize just how diverse it is. I mean, maybe they do, but I mean, from northeast is basically just an extension of Kansas, right? And then you have your southeast kind of Kiamichi Mountains that run in with Arkansas. And then it seems like the whole west side's relatively flat. And especially if you get up there in the panhandle, like northwest, I mean, all you see is yucca bushes.
Right.
The only thing up there is maybe a few antelope and a Dairy Queen. And the last two times we went through there, at least Boise City, there's been the same dude working that same Dairy Queen for like 3 years in a row. So God bless his soul. And hopefully he's manager now. But yeah, yes, Oklahoma's crazy.
That's a fact. My first couple of deer that I ever got to harvest actually came from Northwest Oklahoma. We had some family property up there, and that's where my first three deer came from. And I love hunting up there in that place where you can watch a deer run away for 2 miles.
Yeah.
But that it's a different type of hunt, completely different type of hunting from here. And like you said, you're just a few hours north.
I like it out there though. I've hunted near Sealing to Tologa, that sort of area. And it's cool because you get these big bottoms, river bottoms, just filled with cedars that are just impenetrable and disgusting. And you get a good wheat field or something down there, it's like, yeah, in the right cold, 150, 200 deer on one field. And you're like, ah, dude, I've never seen this many deer in my life. Like, it's awesome.
That's where all the buck venture guys hunt, isn't it?
They hunt more towards Kansas, right?
Yeah, they're up at Laverne. I believe out by Woodward.
Gotcha. Well, Ethan, so I kind of want to take a step back. I mean, not really rush into this buck just yet, but kind of growing up and maybe even the last couple seasons, what's been your expectations, you know, out in the deer woods? You know, are you hunting for age? Are you hunting for score? Or are you like me that, you know, if a 100-incher walks by on the wrong day, then it's getting thumped? Like, what's your expectations when you're out there in the woods?
Man, I'll tell you, I mean, my first three deer of my life could have fit all three of them inside of this deer's rack. I mean, even the deer I have on the wall, I mean, I've had the privilege of taking some nice deer, but nothing huge. I mean, one of those deer behind me, actually scored like 145 and was my largest until I killed this deer. So, I mean, I haven't had the opportunity, you know, really for one just to walk, you know, a big deer. I take that back. I'm sorry. I've missed a big deer, but nothing like this. But yeah, I haven't been really, really picky up until, you know, I got out of high school and kind of got some decent property to hunt and really started focusing on age. I didn't care about rack, you know. Everybody wants to kill a big deer, but I mean, mature deer, that's a good enough for me. But I really, really up until probably the past 8 years, I was never picky.
Yeah. And again, I think that's how it should be because, okay, just the way I view it, and if you want to disagree with me, feel free, 100%. Like, you ain't going to hurt my feelings whatsoever. But I think the age, at least in today's age, kind of gets thrown around too much. Like too many people are dependent on age when most people are only hunting, you know, 20, 60 acre chunks. And it's like, it's hard to manage that, especially if you have the wrong neighbors. Now, if you're in, like, it's all situational, right? Like if you have the right neighbors and the right management plan, like you can hold a really good age class of bucks. But I mean, as the general public knows, I mean, most deer don't sport, you know, most deer sport their biggest rack from ages like five to six, I believe is what that study shows. And, you know, in certain places, like if you see a three-year-old, you're actually doing something. So I just feel like a lot of times people need to kind of take that into consideration and not necessarily like hunt for age per se, but just what kind of floats their boat at the time. Does that make sense?
I completely agree, man. And especially with social media these days and it's in all aspects of life. It's not just with deer hunting, but it's fishing. It's with women, you know, social media and everything else, you know, comparing yourself to other people. And, you know, somebody sees a deer like this and they're like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to hold out forever and pass up every three-year-old deer I see because this hillbilly in central Oklahoma shoots a 200-inch deer. So they're out there. So I'm just going to wait forever. And I don't encourage people to do that. You know, we said before, if you hunt with a crossbow, longbow, recurve, compound, it doesn't matter. Whatever you're hunting with, if you're happy with a 120-inch deer, shoot it. I mean, like Uncle Ted said, I mean, by all means, shoot the spike, you know. Mm-hmm. If that's what you want to do, do it. Nobody's going to get, I don't judge anybody. You know,
you better not be talking crap on the spikes. Okay.
Hey man. Hey, you should have let me know. I have one too. I could have propped it up over here.
Yeah.
My first buck, matter of fact, my first buck with a bow, I was 16 and I hadn't really bow hunted up until then real religiously or anything like that. But I was sitting there in the tree stand and we didn't even run cell cameras on this, or not cell cam, we didn't even run trail cameras, period, on this property. We were just kind of knew there was deer and deer sign, and sitting there one day, and man, this old tree behind me starts shaking, and I start shaking, and out walks this little 8-pointer, and you can barely call him an 8-pointer. And man, he could have been a 230 like this deer right here. It didn't matter. I was shaking just as bad then as I was the day I took this deer. And you know, it's the feeling. It's about the feeling. It's not about the size of the animal. I mean, I get just as jacked up shooting does as I did this deer.
Oh yeah.
Oh, with a bow? The mystical flight of the arrow? Oh my gosh, dude. I shot two does in December this year and lit one of them up and she fell in the field. And I was like, that felt like shooting a buck. It wasn't a buck, but it felt like shooting one. Like it was, I have about as much fun letting an arrow go as you can humanly have. That's legal. I can guarantee you that.
Now, if you flip flop it though, you know, and you miss a doe, it's like, darn, on to the next one. But if you miss a buck, you're like, I might get a little bit higher and then jump out head first.
Yes, exactly.
No, it's interesting. We were you guys talking about the, you know, shooting what you like, because I've noticed, like you talk about people holding off and social media aspect of it. It's interesting because, you know, the reality is like a 4 or 5 or 6 year old buck might be 130 or 140 inches in most places. I know my lease is in Southern Oklahoma. It's like, you see a 5, 6, 7 year old buck, he's probably not going to be 150. Like it's just, that's the reality of it. The most of them aren't. So it's like, if that's my measure, then I'm going to be pretty upset most years.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Matter of fact, my lease down here south of me, that I was saying is closer to the mountains. There's a guy over there and we were talking about that on the lease there. It's we have a lease inside of a large cattle ranch. It's 8,000 acres is the total property. And then we have a lease within it. And they like us to shoot. That's the first thing they told me. Shoot whatever you want. It's your money that you paid for. So whatever makes you happy. But we really like to take old deer, you know. And that guy was showing me pictures of a little buck. I mean, probably, I don't know, maybe 130s, maybe 140. But he didn't have a tooth in his head. He was so old. So like you said, I mean, sometimes the genetics just aren't there and you're passing up on that deer and he's just going to go freeze to death that winter instead of, you know, you could have put an arrow in him and made it a humane death for him, or, you know, Mother Nature's cruel. So it's either going to be by an arrow or a bullet or freeze to death.
What's generally speaking, it's really hard to generalize. Like you always say, you never say always and you never say never, but what is a top end buck for like where you're at? Like, let's say like a really good 5-year-old, like 150 incher, 160 incher, something like that.
I would say right here around the house. Yeah. Without a doubt. 150. I mean, I know people that's hunted their whole life, including my dad. And I mean, he's got some 150s and, maybe a 160 and that's it. And that's a whole life of hunting around here.
That's crazy. So where did that deer come from then?
2 miles from the house, man. I'm telling you, no, where he came from, I don't know. I have no idea where the genetics came from, honestly. Mm-hmm. And everybody's asked me, it's kind of funny. Everybody's like, man, you know, where's his kids at? You know, where's his offspring? They all, I'm sure you got pictures of them. And I'm like, man, I'm not sure.
You just know the neighbors are going to be keeping tabs on you, so you don't want to give out any more tidbits, do you?
Man, I'll show you my trail cam. I'll show you my trail cam pics right now. I ain't scared. Yeah. There ain't a deer on that property even resembles this deer.
Well, it's so funny people say that. Like, you know, somebody shoots a giant, and then the next year it's like, hey, neighbor wants to lease this place for $20,000, and it's like those deer are such genetic outliers and have to have everything right, from nutrition to age to genetics to water to pressure to all of it. I think those are so, you just don't see that, somebody shooting a 200 inch buck in the next 3-4 years later, like, oh, I got another one from his offspring in here. I don't think you ever see that. And another good point to that would be, is imagine that buck is a 3-year-old. You think someone's going to pass that? 160, 170. Do you have a picture of him as a 3-year-old?
I do. Well, and he's probably a 190 at 3.
Ooh. That's hilarious. 190. My point exactly. How many 90-inch, 190-inch 3-year-olds do you know of?
Hey, I do. Well, a lot of that came out after I took the deer. I had people showing me trail cam pics, and then a guy sent me pictures, and he's like, here he is at 3. And I ain't kidding. I mean, he doesn't have the drop tine or one of the back kickers, but you can tell it's him just by everything else. And just the fact, I mean, it's 2 miles, or actually 3 miles, as the crow flies from where I shot him. And you know, it's him. And like, it was in 2021, and he's probably close to 190 there.
Now, knowing that, would you, if you knew he was 3 and you ran into him as a 3-year-old, would you have shot him still?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good. Good.
Yeah. I'm about
to end this podcast really quick.
No. I'm telling you, though, I ain't that picky now. I like shooting old deer, but no. I mean, there's balances to this.
Oh, absolutely.
We had a 150-inch 3 or 4-year-old this year that my buddy Peyton passed 3 times, and it got killed by an outfitter like half a mile from our lease. We about cried. So I couldn't imagine a 190-inch 3-year-old. I'd have to.
Yeah. And man, I did that this year. I had a great year this year. I got to harvest this deer on October 1st. And then in rifle season down on my lease, I got to take one and ended up putting a pen and paper to him. And he ended up grossing about 152. And so it was an amazing year for me. And you know what, it's sad to say, and I mean, I was almost getting to the point, you know, where I was thinking like, all right, I'm going to start being picky. You know, I got the one, you know, I'm only going to shoot this certain deer and all this. And I'm standing at a tailgate behind my friend's dad that's on the lease with me. And we're looking at a deer he killed, super nice deer, a young deer, but it had been shot in the leg in muzzleloader season. And its leg was broke above the knee. So, I mean, he was in bad shape, and he was run down, skinny. And we're looking at him, and he did the right thing by taking the deer. But we're looking at it, and he's like, well, he said, I'll give you some old man advice. He said, you're going to have to start back over with us common folk now. And so I was like, you know what? I thought about that, and I had that deer on camera that I'm talking about. And the next morning I'd already made it up. I was walking out there. I said, if he walks by, I'm shooting. And I just, by pure luck or however you want to put it, I'm walking to my stand, and I shot him on my way to the stand that morning.
Jeez.
So it was crazy. It was a crazy, crazy morning. But I sent that picture to my buddy's dad, and I said, hey, I started over.
Hey, I'll start over with a 152 every day.
Yeah, I don't know if that's really starting over, I guess.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's funny because Taylor was telling me, yeah, I talked on him on the phone quite a bit, and he was saying that you obviously shot your 230 and you shot like a 150s after that. And he said, don't be sad. He said, all 4 of your bucks are about as big as his 2. And I was like, that is damn disrespectful. But it's probably true. It's probably true. That's awesome. So why don't we get into the story of this buck? Let's dive into it then. So let's first start, I guess we can start here. You know, you think of a mega buck like that, and everyone's going to think you have some Drury Outdoors manicured, beautiful property that you've been managing for bucks for a decade. And what that expectation versus the reality, what kind of place are hunting, were you hunting, and how did you come about on that spot?
Well, I was, matter of fact, I was just out cutting hay that's kind of what I do in the summers on my days off. I work shift work, so I have quite a bit of time off. And so I was just out cutting hay and on this property, and I see a lot of timber, or not a lot of timber, I'm sorry. I see a block of timber, and I thought, you know, I was just being nosy and got out of the tractor after I got finished and went walking around in there. And I was like, man, there's a lot of sign. I see some old rubs and stuff like that. And I was like, okay. I mean, there was one little clearing. This block of timber is probably 20 acres. And there's a little clearing right in the middle. There's a pond in there. So you got brush, a pond, and a clearing. And I'm like, man, it's kind of all here. You know, it's a small area, but they got everything. They got food, you know. And they didn't really have any food, but there was a few acorn trees in there. I thought, man, they got acorns. They got water bedding. I said, this is a pretty decent spot. So I talked to my uncle, and I was like, hey, is anybody hunting in there? He said, no. I said, you care if I hunt? He said, go get after it. It's all yours. So I go in there September of 22 and throw up a feeder and a stealth cam. Man, it was probably 2-3 days later. I was working. I went back on nights, and I was working nights. I woke up 2:00 in the afternoon, rolled over, one eye on it, checked my pictures. And this is the first picture I got on that property. It was this deer.
Was there any rumor mills floating around that there was a giant on the or on that property or near it? Has your uncle seen any big deer? Or?
No, he's not much of a hunter at all. I mean, and he hadn't seen anything. And there's always in this area, you always hear that one guy, oh man, this deer crossed the highway in front of me. He looked like a moose. Which that's every year, you know.
That's usually like a 130-inch buck. They're like, dude, it was 200. I swear. Right, yeah. And then you see it, and they're like, all right, that was a nice one, but it wasn't 200.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, I hadn't really heard anything, but man, when I rolled over, I seen this. I was like, I went and jumped out of bed, grabbed my wife, showed my wife. She's all pumped for me. She's not even a big hunter, but she couldn't believe it. And I sent that picture to my dad, and he's like, do not tell anybody. That's the first thing he said, don't show anybody. And so that was in September of 22. And man, this deer was not shy. I mean, I had a ton of pictures of him. Up until, obviously, like every big deer, closer to October you get, more nocturnal they get. And went completely nocturnal, really. So one day, this is in 22, I'd set up just a ground blind. There wasn't any trees large enough to put a tree stand in. Cause I like to get, you know, as high as I can really. And there wasn't anything that I felt like I needed to put a stand in. So in that clearing, by my feeder, I threw up my ground blind, and I think I'm like 28 yards to the feeder. Not a very big clearing at all. And, anyhow, I'm sitting there with my daughter. I took her out because I'd been getting a bunch of does into the feeder, and I was like, you know, I'll take her out so she can see some deer. And wasn't even trying to be quiet. You know, we're, you know, talking, you know, there's a few deer came by, so we're talking about the deer, and I kept hearing something behind me. And finally, I was like, you know, curiosity got me, and I was like, all right, I got to turn around and see what this is. I turn around, open up the back of the blind, and this deer and a smaller buck are standing 50 yards behind me. And I have no shot through the brush. All I can see is horns. And there was a couple of acorn trees back there, a couple of red oaks. And that's really the only thing that year. We had a pretty bad drought here. So there wasn't much to eat besides those few big red oaks. And I was like, oh my God. And I couldn't do anything. And it was really funny. I'm sitting there, and I turned around with my bow and tried to get set up just in case for some reason he came towards me a little bit, I could get it, stick an arrow through there. And my daughter goes, why is your arrow shaking? I was like, oh baby, I wish you knew. I wish you knew why that arrow was shaking. And so I had to sit there until dark, watch this deer walk away in the dark. And so after that, I was like, I seen where he went, where I thought the bedding area was. All right, I got you now. I'm smarter than you, you know? Yeah, right. But I thought that for a second. And so I moved this blind, picked my blind up and moved it back to the trail in between where I thought the bedding and these few red oaks were. And probably 2 weeks later, I'm sitting back there, and right before dark, I see a little buck come out to my feeder. Well, now I'm 50 yards back from where I was on the other side of the brush, and I could barely see my feeder, but I was just trying to intercept in between where I thought the bedding area was. Now, that deer came from the complete opposite direction, and I thought, nah, there's no way that big deer's with him. 5 minutes later, this big deer walks out to my feeder from the opposite direction, and I had to sit there again with no shot and watch him feeding till dark.
And at this point, and he's the three-year-old 190?
What I think he's – or no, I guess he would have been four, so five. Yeah, he would have been – I'm sorry, he wasn't three when I said 190. He would have been four. 21, okay. He would have been four. We judged him at 6.5 when I took him. So this would have made him five. He would have been 5.5.
I got you.
In 22. I got you. Sorry about that. But anyhow, he walks off in the darkness again on me. And I thought, well, that's it. You know, that's the last, you know, I seen him twice on the hoof, and I'm never going to see this deer. And I think honestly, by me moving that blind, I messed up his area, and he sensed that. That's why he moved the trail he was coming in on. I think he completely moved just because that blind was there and it threw him off. So it was all my fault. Needless to say, I moved my blind back to where it was and left it alone, and never seen him again in 22. Matter of fact, my last picture of him was November 9th. And which what I always say, that's when the rut starts here, is second week of November. And sure enough, he's gone. And I'm like, well, all right, that's it. Never going to see him again. I was waiting all season to hear about him. Somebody hitting him with a car, somebody shooting him, something. Never heard anything. So
this whole time, you've not told anybody but your dad?
A couple
buddies.
A couple guys I work with that work, that live a long ways away from here and didn't know where I was at. But everybody who, you know, I kind of felt bad. Some of my good friends, I showed another good friend of mine, but he didn't know where it was. Just knew I had a big deer on camera. So like I said, November 9th is the last picture, disappears. No pictures all winter, spring, until June. I decided to go back out and put my cameras out and fill my feeder and just to see what's out there, see if it's worth hunting this year. And I, like I said, I had acquired my lease too. And sure enough, June rolls around and I get this picture of this deer, and it is just a solid ball of velvet out past his ears in June. And I thought, oh, there's no way. That's got to be him. Like, nothing else is that big in June. And where everything else is just spikes, you know,
right,
of velvet. And this deer's already got main beams in June. And so I was like, all right.
Up until this point, you think that deer's just dead. Or maybe he died of natural causes. Or maybe he's in some illegal hunter's freezer somewhere. Or, you know, something along those lines. You completely
wrote him off. Yeah, exactly. I never thought I'd see this deer again. And where it's at, there's a highway and a county road on both sides of the property. So it could have easily been poached. And then there's wheat fields around. He could have been, he could have went to wheat in the late winter, and somebody killed him up there. I just had no idea. And so anyway, in June, I get these pictures and I thought, oh boy, all right, here we go. So I pretty much focused everything on this property and keeping him on the property. That was the big thing, is because, you know, I talked to some other people about that, about baiting and stuff. And they're like, you know, how do you feel about baiting? I'm like, man, in Oklahoma, if you're not doing it, your neighbor is. I mean, mm-hmm. you can live on this moral tear of I'm too good to bait. I'm like, man, that's fine. I'm like I said, I'm all for it. If you don't want to bait, don't do it. Shoot them between bedding and water, or bedding and the natural food source, whatever you want to do, do it. But if you're not baiting, your neighbor is. So that's how I felt about Amen. That. So
my buddies on the lease, they have a nickname for me. They call me Master Baits on for baiting.
That's just but go. Yet. But yet they hunt over a winter wheat field and all that good stuff. And they say it's natural, but I don't know how natural a monocrop is in a condensed area. You know what I mean? So like, it's all the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like food, like you said, food plots. You got, you know, where do all these winter peas and and wheat and clover come? Yeah. Where'd all that come from in the middle of this pecan bottom?
Yeah. It's nutrition, bro. Come on.
Right. So anyhow, I was focusing everything I had on this deer. Naturally, like I said, September comes around, he starts getting nocturnal, and right around the 29th, I believe, 29th and 30th, both days of September, he comes out in the daylight. And I thought, all right, it's on. Like he slipped up.
Did he look about 260 with velvet on? He had to look significantly bigger too, right? Oh, man.
He did, and I'm telling you right now, I could not say it. I could not tell myself that I had a 200-inch deer on camera. I just couldn't do it. Just, you know, I grew up watching the Outdoor Channel, and I've seen the juries. I've seen everybody in Iowa, Illinois, Ohio. They shoot, you know, 200-inch deers, and I couldn't tell myself that I had a 200-inch deer on camera, you know. But, everybody that I showed the picture to told me I did. But so he finally sheds his velvet, and like you said, he still looked huge, you know, without velvet. But into September, he slips up, starts coming in daylight, and I thought, all right, it's on. I got to be there October 1st, even though David Payne over here tells me it's going to be 92 degrees on October 1st. I'm like, oh, that's going to be miserable, you know. And actually had to work October 1st. We had some extra work going on, and they called me in to come work. And I was like, man, am I that guy? How that guy that's going to call in sick on October 1st? And I had never had any morning pictures of him. So I'm like, all right, if I can get out of there, you know, at 3:30, if I can slip out, I could be in the stand by 4:00. And I was pumping myself up all day about it. And then, you know, as the day went on and the hotter it got, I'm like, man, you know, that AC and that recliner sure sounds good.
Yeah.
And on my way home, I talked myself in and out of hunting all the way home from work. And I finally get home and like, man, you can't kill him on the couch. So let's go. So I run in the house, change clothes, grab my bow, release, and left. I mean, I didn't grab a backpack, a flashlight, a knife, nothing. And just ran out there and got in the blind as quick as I could. And I'm pouring sweat. I mean, I took a bath.
It's like a hot box.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Sitting in the sun all day. And I took a bath in some dead down wind or sent away or something and tried to mask it. I'm sure I smelled like a goat anyway. And so I'm sitting there sweating. Nothing's really happening. And then it's closer to dark. A doe come in and she was out there feeding in front of me. And as I was watching her, the wind, when I got there, the wind was perfect. And then I start watching this grass in front of me, and this grass is just swirling in front of me. And I was like, oh no. But she wasn't spooked by anything. She was just calm and it just kept feeding out in front of me. And I thought, all right, as long as she stays calm, you know, we're going to be okay. But if she blows, I'm probably going to shoot her anyway. Then right before dark, probably 20, 30 minutes before dark, I see this little buck come out that he'd been running with all summer. And I thought, oh, there's no way. And he comes out and he hops over the panels and starts feeding. And I turn and look to my left where he had came from. And this deer right here is standing 50 yards inside the brush, as still as a statue. I mean, it was the most incredible thing, really, is just watching big deer. Now, I haven't had the privilege of watching this big a deer in my life, but
right,
just watching how mature deer react, you know, how they move and stuff, and how they watch other deer's body language and whatnot. And that's exactly what he did. He stood there dead still and stared at that little buck and doe. And for what it felt like 2 hours, but it was really about 10 minutes. And I'm shaking so bad that I felt like I was going to cramp up. And I was shaking, and I had just upped my bow to 75 pounds. And I'm sitting here thinking, man, can I even pull my bow back? I mean, this is going to be embarrassing if I have to tell everybody this deer walked by and I couldn't draw my bow.
Oh, I'd put both feet on the freaking pockets of those limbs and if I had to.
So he's standing there, and I would just kept looking. I would look at him and then look at my feet just to try to slow my heart rate down. Look at my feet. I look up, make sure he's still there. Well, I look up and he's gone. And I went, oh no. And then I look and he's standing there at 27 yards broadside. And yeah, the whole me thinking I couldn't draw my bow back went out the window. I jerked that thing back so fast that matter that he pinned me. I mean, pinned me instantly, whether it was the sound of the arrow or whether it's me moving too fast or whatever, he pins me and turns and looks. And all this takes place and, you know, in seconds, but I'm sitting here trying to settle my pen. My pen looks like it's the size of a Coke bottle and sticking out there on the end of my riser. And I'm like, and I finally get it settled, touch and release. And I hear a loud smack. He turns, tucks his tail, and runs off where he came from. And I thought, all right, I got an arrow in him. You know, he tucked his tail. I heard a smack. You know, I got him. And he goes out of sight pretty quick, and I couldn't wait any longer. I jumped out of the blind, left my bow in there, jumped out of the blind. I run up to where he was standing, and I can't find my arrow anywhere. And I'm looking around. There's no hair. There's no blood right there. I'm like, oh, no. What did I hit? You know, at that point, I'm like, man, I hit him in the leg. I hit him somewhere.
Right.
And I walk about 10 feet, 10 or 12 feet, and I look, and I see two little bitty pin drops of blood. I mean, nothing really at all. I thought, oh, no, this is bad. So I just turned around and left. I walked right past my blind, my bow, everything, just walked right past it and head to the truck, and I'm calling my dad. I'm like, I got him. I couldn't even talk. I was so tore up, I couldn't talk. I'm like, I got him. And he's like, all right, you think you made a good shot? I said, I think so. And he's like, all right, let's go to your house. I'll be there in a minute. We're going to give him at least an hour. We'll go back. And like I said, I only live 2 miles from this property. And anyhow, dad gets here and he's laughing at me because I'm sitting here trying to put batteries in a flashlight. I'm shaking so bad I can't even get the batteries in it. And so finally, you know, what felt like ages, you know, he's like, all right, let's go out there. Let's see what you got. You know, he's trying to be calm because I'm a wreck. So he's trying to be calm. He's trying to be the calm one here. Anyhow, we get out there and man, we didn't make it 20 yards when we find good pink blood. And I'm like, all right. I feel better now. Like can start breathing a little bit, but still holding my breath, but I feel a little bit better. And then it was weird, really weird blood trail. It wasn't steady. It was like every 20 feet. 30 feet, we find blood.
You like, think okay, that's because he was hauling butt through there, or do you think?
I think so now. And well, I found out later why, but I'll tell y'all in a second there. So he's making these big bounds, and there's a dry creek up there, and I said, all right, he's laying in the bottom of that creek for sure. Get up to the edge of the creek, deer's not there. I'm like, oh no, if he climbed out of this creek, that means he's doing fine. You know, I didn't, he's got all four wheels if he can get out of this creek.
Yeah.
And So we get up the other side, pick up the trail again on the other side of the creek, and then we're out into an open pasture, tall grass. And then that was terrible, trying to track at night in a, you know, tall grass. And finally, we get up to a spot where we could tell he had fell down. And I thought, man, you know, that's a good sign. You know, he's running out of gas here. And then we find another spot where he fell down, and another spot. And I'm like, man, he's falling, but he's not staying down. You know, I don't know what's going on here. Well, Dad was like, man, I think we just need to back out. We need to leave. You know, we'll come back first thing in the morning. And I was like, man, let's, you know, he's going to ruin if he sits out here. It's 90 degrees at 8 o'clock, and he's going to ruin, you know, if we leave him out here overnight. And there was a small thicket out in the middle of this field. And I was like, let's go to that thicket. If he's not there, you know, we'll back out. And so we started easing that direction. And man, that grass was so tall. I was 10 yards from this deer before I seen him. And when I laid eyes on it, I lost it. It was, I couldn't function. I couldn't talk. I mean, I was an absolute wreck. But man, it was quite the experience. And what felt like hours was just a matter of minutes, you know, from the highs and lows of trailing a deer like this.
Mm-hmm. So in total, how far did he make it?
On Onyx, I mapped blood because I had my Onyx app pulled up, and every time we would find blood, I would make a pin. And later I went back and looked at that pin. I looked at that trail, and it was 253 yards is how far that deer went. But you know, we get up to him, and Dad's like, where did you hit this deer? And I was like, I don't know, because he was laying on that one side, and there's not a mark on him. And he's like, where'd you hit this deer? And we roll him over and found out that when I took the shot, and I still see it plain as day, picture in my head. When I took the shot, that deer ducked string and turned towards me. And the only thing I can think of is when he ducked and turned towards me, I hit him right there in the neck. It cut that main artery right here. There's a line mm-hmm. right there on the neck. And that's right where that arrow hit. And I felt super lucky at that point, because I had thought this whole time that I'd made a great shot.
Yeah.
By the blood we were finding, you know, we're finding good pink blood. And no, I'd gotten extremely lucky. But I mean, it's how it goes.
I mean, I did that same thing with a recurve this year, like hit him right there, and it was like 150 yard blood trail. It looked like a water hose the whole time.
Oh yeah.
And I give you credit. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, finish it. Finish it. I cut you off too many times.
I was just going to say that it'll give you that feeling that you did hit him in the lungs, because it does have that oxygenation in the blood. Like the bubbles are there. You're like, ooh, I smoked him. Like the whole time I thought I hit this recurve buck in the lungs, but I was like, I didn't ever see the arrow hit him. Like, and I definitely didn't cut through him like butter. So it just confused me until I got up on him. I was like, oh. Makes a lot more sense. Did you get a lot of penetration, or did you just like slice through him?
At the Hunter's Advantage, we live by the KISS slogan.
You were not supposed to tell them that.
No, I meant we like to keep it simple, stupid. All jokes aside, Exodus is the definition of keeping it simple. Let's say you aren't really sure what arrow setup you should run. The Exodus Arrow Builder will help you build the right arrows for your exact setup.
Or if you don't have time to change those trail cam batteries in the dog days of summer, Exodus has a great selection of cell cameras and regular trail cameras. And if you pair them with one of their solar panels, you'll be set for a long while. I've shot over a dozen deer and a big old black bear in Saskatchewan with these arrows, and I trust them to fly right and get the job done. And they have something for everyone with the Exodus NIS micro diameter arrows or the Exodus MMTs.
So if you want to save money on Exodus arrows, cell cameras, or anything else they got on their website, make sure to check out ExodusOutdoorGear.com and use code HA10 for 10% off.
Once again, that's ExodusOutdoorGear.com, and make sure to use code HA10 for 10% off at checkout. Now let's get back to the podcast.
Man, I sliced it. That arrow was nowhere to be found. I still to this day, I mean, I don't know where it went to, whether it did get a little bit, whether it stuck in him and he broke it off somewhere. I don't know. I mean, but it did. It just was a perfect clean slice, like you did it with a pocket knife. And it was like you said, it was the whole time thinking that you got a double lung and why is this deer running 200 yards? And then you get up there like, oh, okay. It's all luck. I mean, like I said, that pin on that bow was about the size of a Coke bottle. So I'm not saying I wasn't saying I was dead set, dead steady.
Well, those Matthews have like aggressive, like I think Matthews have somewhat aggressive cams. Like that valley kind of comes back pretty hard. Mm-hmm. When you hit that final rock and you're like, all right, 2 years, 230 inches in front of me, monster. And you're going to settle in an anchor to shoot. What is it in slow motion? What do you remember about it? Like, were you like, is this really happening? Because that's how I always feel when I get pulled back on a good one. Like, oh my God, this is really going to happen.
I black out.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of felt both ways. Like, I can picture everything in my head to this day. What happened and where I had and where my pin was and when I squeezed the trigger and him turning, ducking towards me, ducking into it, I guess you'd say. I could picture all of it in my head, but I came up that front leg and when I touched that bottom third, I pulled the trigger and, or so I thought. And, but then at the same time, like at the short few minutes after the shot, you know, I was such an adrenaline rush that it was all black. I mean, I couldn't believe that this actually happened, you know, like I said, seeing him twice last year, all the pictures, it was so overwhelming that I almost did black out.
So you finally walk up on this deer, you put your hands around him. What's going through your mind right now?
Relief. I mean, it felt like I was carrying a 100-pound backpack, you know, with me through that whole blood trail, and just relief. And I mean, I like I said, I was an emotional wreck, you know, and my dad, he's sitting there, he's like, what have you done? What have you done?
That's what I was going to say is you've seen that, like you see it all the time when someone, not all the time, but you see when someone shoots a big one like that, it's like, what have you done? Or what have you done? Is literally like the line you hear people say when it's like, cause it's so undescribable. It's like, I don't even know what you did. That, what am I looking at right now?
That was exactly it. I mean, like I said, my dad's, he's been hunting all over the country and all over Oklahoma. And he never even put his hands on anything like this. And so he was in pure amazement about it.
I assume you were snapping pictures, calling everybody in your contact list, because that's dang sure what I would have been doing.
So the people that did know about it, I sent them just the deer, just a side, one side of the horns, and sent it to them, and I said, I got him. And then that picture in minutes, I'm talking minutes, I had people that didn't even know about the deer messaging me. It was like, what did you kill? Because, you know, that one side of him laying on the ground, everybody got sent out and everybody's like, what did you kill? What'd you kill? You know, let me see him. And sorry, I'm having trouble with these stupid headphones. But anyhow, he's like, everybody's, you know, saying, what'd you do? And matter of fact, Whitney Reed, she's on the Buck Venture staff. Mm-hmm. I'm friends with her, went to school with her actually. And I sent it to her and her husband, and she's sitting there with Jeff Danker, and they FaceTime me. And so I'm FaceTiming them, you know, I'm trying to show what I got, you know, in the dark and everything else, and my phone's on 5% and naturally. And so Jeff's like, man, you know, how do you think he's going to go? I was like, man, I think he's close to 200. And Jeff's like, dude, I've seen a lot of deer. That deer's well over 200. Congratulations. And then my phone dies.
Oh no.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
When do you put a tape on them?
So luckily, a buddy of mine, Austin Stevens, he's also with Buck Ventures. He lives here, just north of me, and he has a walk-in cooler. So first thing I did after we took our initial pictures in the field of with the deer, just with iPhones and stuff, you know, I had my wife come out and take pictures for me. I took him up there as fast as I could because, like I said, it's so hot, you know, that night. You know, we're talking about in the 80s that night, 70s, 80s. So as fast as I could, I got him up there to the cooler and got him propped up in the cooler because we had planned on taking good daytime pics the next day. Mm-hmm. So luckily got him in a cooler that night. And the next day we got out there and got some good daylight photos of him and put a tape on him then. And when we first put a tape on him, of course, we got, you know, two people measuring and one person doing math, and ended up coming up. We scored him really, really conservatively and came up with 229. And I was like, there's no way, like, we did something wrong. And like, where's this coming from? And so I was like, man, if we never get another tape on him, I'm saying 229. I'm fine with that.
And that's my first question, is just how would you go about scoring them? Like, because there's certain things you look at them, because I got a little a couple pictures pulled up right now, and it's to official score it, I'd hate to be the guy to do that, because that's a lot of time there.
Yeah, that was us. I mean, it took us quite a while, and we're by no means pros at it. You know, we've just measured a few, you know, typical eights, right, and 10 pointers that we've shot. So we were just measuring all the inches of antler he had. If it was an inch long, we were putting a tape on it. So we come up with that just total inches was a 229. And then, like you said, man, I took him to the Backwoods show, and I wheel him up there at the Backwoods show, and everybody, of course, most everybody knew about it by then. And one of the guys there, he looks at it and he goes, "Can't wait to do that one." Because, like you said, you're gonna have to block out your calendar for to get an official score on this one.
Jeez. So,
what were some of the more notable, like, you know, measurements on that deer? Like, I'm curious on beams, width, and then greatest mass. Like, what were some of those?
It almost looks like his mass gets greater. You know,
palmation,
the further it gets from the base.
It sure does, man. He's 5.5 at the base, and he's like 6 something on his fourth measurement.
Mm.
So
what did he end up having? Like 45, 50 inches of mass, something like that.
I think, man, I'd have to pull the paper up, but I really do think he's close to 50 inches of mass.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. That's alone. Amazing. And then the beams, I'm thinking beams are around 25 or something like that.
What about width?
Inside, he's like 19 and a half inside.
He wears 19 well. He looks, he's one of those ones that inside, well, that mass is hurting him on his spread. It's like he's bringing his horns closer together.
Well, that's the deal. He's like 19 inside. He's like 24 outside.
That's insane.
That happens when you got baseball bats for horns.
Yeah, and you know, that was the thing, is between 22 and 23, which I didn't care in 22. If he walks out 22, I'm sticking him. But 22 to 23, I think he gained 20 inches of points, or 20 inches of horn, just over a year, having a lot better food available, a lot better nutrients around. And I think he got 20 inches on him.
So from 22 to 23, what I mean, I know this is a lot to look at, but what did he have and what did he not have? I mean, did he have that, what is that, a drop tine on the right side, or?
Yes. The drop tine there, he had it. And matter of fact, I think it might have been longer in 22, but it looks like he bumped it in velvet, and it kind of turned it down, and he actually stunted it in velvet. But all of his kickers that are sticking off back there, all of those are a couple inches longer on both sides. Mm-hmm. And then obviously his mass, I think he gained a lot of mass in 1 year.
Oh, that's awesome. So are those 22 sheds and obviously the 21 sheds, are those out there somewhere getting eaten by squirrels, or does somebody have those?
Man, I have walked every inch of that property that I had permission on, and I cannot find them. I haven't heard of them anywhere. I mean, I would buy them. I mean, hey, if somebody sees this, you got sheds this deer, let's talk. But
I can find them for you. You may go out there and smoke a cigarette and accidentally drop it.
Yeah, no kidding. But okay, so that's another thing about this deer. Like I said, I'm hunting a 40 acre property with 20 acres of timber in it. And, this pasture was 40 acres. I think the whole property ended up being like 60, but, like I said, 20 acre block of timber. And I had people 2 miles north of me with pictures. I had people 2 miles south of me with pictures. I had people 3 miles west of me with pictures. This deer had a huge range.
That's amazing. That much of a roamer and that big, and also kind of like you said, like it right next to a highway or a county road or whatever you said, that's extremely poachable.
Both of them.
That's insane. A deer of that caliber can make it that long, legal or not.
It was. Yeah, exactly. You know, I've never been, you know, pressed with a deer like this standing next to the fence by the road. So I can't say, you know, whether or not what would have happened, but that, I mean, there's a lot of people that wouldn't think twice about busting this deer off the road.
Big deer make people do stupid things. And absolutely. That's just a sad truth.
Oh, you're talking about the mobile hunting wagon. That's what I've heard some people call it.
Yeah.
The blind that has wheels. Some people call it.
Yeah. Blind on wheels for sure.
Yeah. It's so cool to see one of them, a buck like that, shot legal, shot with a compound bow, because usually in 2023, 2024, you know, somebody has a cell cam picture of this, who tells somebody who gets wind of a buck like this, who ends up driving on the road and shooting it illegally. Like, it just seems like that happens more often than you see people even killing them half the time. So it's really cool to see it come full circle for, you know, and get killed the right way. Like that honors that deer in the way it needed to be. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. And you know, it's, like you said, and, you know, in this day and time, you know, that word gets out, and if it doesn't get poached, at least somebody comes in and leases it out from under you. You know, I mean, fortunately I was on family property, so I didn't think that was going to happen, but you never know. Money talks. I mean, you know, what are you willing to pay for a lease with a deer like this on it? I mean, so, and the other thing, like you said, man, I didn't even think about it until I was talking to your buddies at Outdoor Defiance, and you know, had I just been sitting there with no idea in the world about this deer, and he just stumbles in front of me and I shoot him, you know, all those people who also had pictures, now they're blaming me for poaching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, if that had happened, you know, if I just dumb luck, he walks in front of me and you know, now I'm in trouble. So
that is true. That's what happened to the Huff buck. You know, he went out there, didn't know anything about that deer, and he ended up shooting it. And I mean, I don't know if he said it was neighbors or what, but he had a, I don't want to say an investigation, but he's had a lot of complaints about that, which are obviously untrue. But I mean, there's some jealous people out there, and I wouldn't put it past them.
Exactly, man.
Have you had, I mean, I know you talked about people commenting about the high fence and all that other stuff, and I feel like, heck, even though small as the hunting community actually is, you'd think people would be more supportive of each other. Have you had any of the dark side of the hunting media? I mean, God bless the guy who shoots a big deer in 2024, because it seems like all hell is to pay, right? Everyone that's jealous. But have you experienced any of that?
You know, I scroll through the comments. You know, I mean, I've had, like I said, I've had the privilege of having him in North America Whitetail, Field & Stream, Buckmasters, all of those publications. And, you know, you scroll through the comments and it's like first or second high fence. And I'm like, man, I've never been the guy to put crappy comments on stuff, but like, you know, who peed in your Cheerios this morning? That the first thing you did,
yeah.
You know, the first thing you did when you woke up was decided to make a comment on a picture of somebody's deer. You know, I mean, if you would have commented on it, said needed another year or something, I mean, I'd respect that, but
no, I wouldn't.
But you know, it's so dumb. You know, all these pictures of great deer, which Oklahoma, man. I mean, we could talk about that, but Oklahoma is putting out some
Yeah, never mind. No, they're not. There's no deer here. They're extinct.
North Texas is putting out some big deer. But
exactly.
No. Man, it's insane of all the deer that have been taken this year and in just the stupid comments underneath every single picture. So other than just crappy comments, I don't think, unless I'm just too dumb to know. I don't think I've been a part of any bad press.
Well, I'll be honest. When I saw the picture of that buck, you shot the deer opening day season, right? You said?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I remember seeing that picture and going, what the hell is that? Like, that did not, it didn't look. Now, I know these deer are anomalies, but that deer literally looks like it's carrying two Louisville Sluggers with just the trees coming out each side. And then the presence that buck has from the front when you were holding him, I was like, that looks like an escapee with dark horns. But you know, all those high-fence deer do the discolorations and of the horns and stuff. It's usually like a dead giveaway. That buck has those beautiful caramel natural horns. I was like, that looks like a high-fence deer with caramel-coated horns. It did, exactly. But it's not.
And no, it's not. And it not saying I was upset, but man, like I had some pictures of a couple of days, probably a week prior. Man, he had that like almost cherry red, you know, fresh out of velvet, that cherry red horn, and just in the matter of a week, they got darker and darker. And I was you know, I was kind of wishing I caught him a little bit earlier, but it, I mean, needless to say, it doesn't matter, but. Yeah, it was an absolute beauty, beautiful deer. And you know, what really surprised me about him, obviously he was, you know, king of his area. Nobody's pushing him around. But this deer's body was nothing. I mean, I've killed both of those deer behind me had bigger bodies than this deer, I think.
I've heard that, though. I've Don Higgins, we talked to Don about that. And so yes. Don Higgins, Illinois, he killed like 3 200-inch bucks. We asked him about that. And he said that every 200-inch buck that he shot has been like 20 or 30 pounds less than like an average big buck in his area. I don't know if that's because of all the nutrients go to putting that antler on, I would think. And also, here's another theory. Makes sense. If you're carrying around a 6, 7, 8 pound horn, whatever it is, instead of a one-fourth that weight, it probably burns a few more calories.
That's true. I mean, I don't know the whole science of it, like you said, but man, I would just imagine that they're putting so much effort. So their body's putting so much effort into those horns that, you know, they're everything they got's going there. And, you know, I noticed up at the Backwoods show there in Oklahoma City that all of those really, really big deer, they all looked like this deer body wise, like none of them just looked. Outside of one deer, there was one deer up there that looked like it might have weighed 300 pounds.
God,
but it was a monster. But there, all the other really big, the deer over 200 inches all had the same body type.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah,
that's really cool. Yeah.
So, what's next for you? Like, I know you kind of touched on it earlier. You know, you getting back to reality with the 150. But let's say there's not a 150 that steps out. Are you taking a shot, or are you going to let it? I guess what's your goal to sum it up?
You know, I've actually been thinking about that. And after I shot this deer, I was 4 days later. I was in the blind again, down on my lease, and I had a deer that come in down there. I'm sorry, it was actually the same deer that I ended up taking with my rifle. I seen him 4 days later after this deer. So almost had a really cool year. But anyhow, he came in, the wind swirled, he boogered and left. But I caught myself after that. I was shaking just as bad as with this deer. But to answer your question, man, I really don't know. I had I was lucky enough in, it was November the 17th of last year. I had the best day I've ever had in the woods. I had 7 bucks within bow range in one morning set. 7 different bucks. And it's on my Instagram reels. I took some videos. I was quick to the draw on my phone and took some videos of those bucks running by. But man, it was an absolute craziness that morning. And I actually drew back on 2 different bucks that morning and let them go. I grabbed my bow 4 different times just because I would hang it back up and 10 minutes later, something else would run by. And
we need to send you a video camera to get B-roll for us or something.
Geez, I don't know that that'll ever happen again, but man, that was, and that's another thing. I'm going to start taking a camera with me just for mornings like that, whether you kill anything or not, having that type of morning is something to remember.
Oh, and, absolutely.
But no, I think I'm just going to focus on a mature deer. You know, whether that's a 150 or a 135. I mean, if I think he's mature, he'll be as old as he'll ever get.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's an elite club when you start talking about people that have shot 200 inch deer. There's not a whole lot of people that could step into that circle. But, and I always hear the, oh, well, that guy's run. And I can't wait. So I ever shoot a 200, I'm going to say, run me. And I'm going to go back and do exactly what you did, going for a 130 again that next weekend. I think that's awesome. It's a full circle moment. I mean, you chase a deer like that and you pray to ever get eyes on one, not, you know, let alone have a multi-year quest for one. But I think that's a full circle moment. And I don't think that run to you at all.
No, man. And if you ever do lose that feeling, man, if you don't start walking in, I mean, you do need to hang it up. That's when you need to retire. Cause like I said, 4 days later, I had a buck walking in and was shaking just as bad. So it's more chasing a feeling than it is chasing a certain deer.
Yeah, that's true. There's always harder things to do. Like you can pick up a trad bow. You can go the Tim Wells route and have a blow dart and a tree spear or something like that. I mean, there's always more you can do for sure.
I think I commented that on your post the other day on TikTok.
Oh yeah.
Must miss that.
If you're not up in a saddle hunting with a trad bow, you're not doing it right. I said, if you're not hunting like Tim Wells, you're not doing it right.
Oh yeah, that was the one, Jake, you were talking about blue jay feathers and all that crap.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I remember that one. I probably missed that comment because I don't know. There's certain days I don't even look at the comments because you get those people that's what they do for fun and maybe as a full-time job is just comment negative stuff. So there's certain days you wake up, you're like, I better not look at that or I'm going to say something stupid. So must have been one of those days.
Oh, that was pretty good.
That's hilarious though, because we had a guy the other day that was a boat captain that commented on our stuff, and it was like 2 podcasts in a row. He said something like super negative. And I got on my personal, and he had the same YouTube name as he did Instagram. And I went to his Instagram and I messaged him. I said, I was really polite. I said, hey, it sounds like you hate our podcast. What's going on? He didn't read it. He went, deleted his other 2 comments, and now he's commenting on our YouTube videos like positive. He's like, yeah, I totally agree with what you guys are saying. Like, I was like, are you serious? I don't understand that.
Man, like I said, you know, what makes somebody just wake up and just that's what they want to do that day is comment negatively on stuff. I never understood it.
No consequence. Well, that's why.
Yeah, that's true. And just like Christian said, most of them, if you just confront them, not a lot of people like confrontation nowadays, and even if it's over the internet, they're like, oh, I didn't mean it, I was just joking, and then they're cool, right? Which is fine, like, you know, but we definitely have our alt accounts where we'll defend ourselves on alt but
that's awesome. Well, with three Oklahomans here, I want to do some transition to some Oklahoma talk for a little bit, if that works for you.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so there's Oklahoma. We talked about it earlier. Obviously, you call it what you want, Oklahoma or North Texas or the land of small deer for anyone that wants to come hunt here. How do you feel about current regs and stuff going on in Oklahoma, whether it's, and let's start here. What do you think about two tags for a non-resident and over the counter and about as cheap as they come in the bow hunting state? Does that bother you at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll never, I don't know. Don't want to speak too negatively of the people in Oklahoma City, but I don't agree with a lot of things. One, I do think we need to go to one buck and about six does. And then I do think we need to, you know, catch on the trend. If it all does go back to conservation, we do need to raise the non-resident tags. I mean, with land prices pretty reasonable. Now, after a deer like this get posted around, I don't know how the land prices are going to go, but land prices halfway decent and then cheap out-of-state licenses, man, I think they got to do something. I mean, I don't want to go the Colorado route. I don't want to charge somebody $1,000 to come kill a deer. But also, you know, I think $300 is pretty cheap for somebody to come shoot a deer of this caliber. Yeah, six deer.
Yeah.
And then pretty good quality deer at that.
Do we have a limit like Kansas? Because obviously Kansas is obviously a one buck and their non-resident license is like $550 if you draw out.
Yeah.
And it's a draw. So there's a limited amount of out-of-staters that are able to flood, you know, their public lands or, you know, hunt private somehow, some way there. Does Oklahoma have that cap on non-resident licenses or no?
Mm-mm. Not to my knowledge, okay. They don't.
I didn't think so, but I was just double checking.
Well, there's different systems too. You got Kansas, like a pure draw, and then you have like Nebraska just moved to a non-resident capped. So it's like non-resident tags over the counter up until 3,000, then we're done. They're gone, right? Oklahoma is come as you are, come one, come all. That's how they are. And I understand it, but if you look at any hunting show, everyone, if you looked at five, seven years ago, there was never a trip to Oklahoma. Now, every one of those shows, it's like, here's my hunt in Oklahoma. Here's my hunt in Oklahoma. Here's my hunt in Oklahoma. I'm on the lease with Blake Shelton in Oklahoma. Everybody's coming.
Yeah.
I think it is because of those favorable regulations, because it's like $2. And also there's not an incentive structure to manage for trophies, because it's like, oh, there's a nice buck walking by me at $650 that I can't really tell exactly what it is. Let's take a gamble on that one and I'll get a big one on the next one. You know, imagine how you would shoot differently in a different state if that was the regs. If you got two tags in Kansas, I'd be taking a gamble on the first one.
Right. Exactly. I mean, I've had the privilege of hunting Illinois twice. And man, I was up there that first time and I passed up several bucks up there in Illinois, because you know, you're like, I'm in the land of giants. We were hunting right next to Pike County. So I'm like, they're here. I mean, they're here. There's big deer here. I've seen the property we were on, there'd been some big deer taken. And so I held out and ate a tag sandwich the first time I went up there. And so then the next time I went up, I ended up taking a smaller buck on the last afternoon. I mean, just basically so I didn't eat a tag sandwich. But, you know, in saying that, you know, I didn't help, you know, the state of Illinois by doing that. But, you know, also, you know, you got, like you said, there's a lot more people being able to come to Oklahoma and hunt than Illinois. As far as non-residents, and you got all those people, you know, the last afternoon, you know, they're shooting a 2-year-old six pointer just so they don't eat a tag sandwich.
Well, and I'm with you. Come shoot your 2-year-old six pointer, but you get one.
One.
You get one. Like, and I get it from the perspective of like, if, you know, if you look at the stats, the argument that maybe the ODWC or other people will bring up is, well, the majority of people never shoot $2, so people don't take advantage of that. Well, that's true, but then you also have the outliers that like hunt near Jake that, yeah, but they might not shoot $2, but them and their family shoot $5-6 off 20 acres, you know? So yep. there has to be a line drawn there. And I wouldn't even be opposed if they changed it to two buck tags for a resident and one for a non-resident. That's a step in the right direction, at least.
Yeah, I think so.
Baby steps, you know. And, you know, I really hate to say that, you know, I want any regulations, any stronger regulations. You know, there's a two part of that. You know, one, I want the deer population to do better. But on the other side of that, you know, the I don't know what you want to, how you want to say it, discontent for the government. Yeah. You don't want your government telling you what you can and can't do. Because you know, what does it turn into? Not saying Oklahoma will, and I pray it never does, but you know, what it's saying, you know, what's going on in Colorado and California. You know, was it, you know, you start with one buck and then it goes to one buck, one doe, and then one deer total for the year. And then, when does the regulation stop, you know? And then, cause, not to get off on a whole different topic here, but man, I talked about it the other day and I really feel strongly on this. You know, I watched a podcast with Cam Haynes a while back, and he was like, the anti-hunters are winning. He said, because they're all on the same team. He said, they all want hunting to go away. They don't care if it's bear or deer or elk. You know, they want hunting to go away in general. And, you know, and he said, you know, the pro hunters are all against each other. You know, the deer hunters are against the elk hunters, and the bear hunters are against the deer hunters, and the recurve compound crossbow hunters are against each other. And he's like, you know, we're losing. So, you know, whatever you talk about regulations and stuff, you know, that kind of is in the back of my mind. You know, we don't want any more regulations on the hunting industry, anything to discourage people from hunting, because we are losing as a group. We're losing right now.
Yeah. Which that's a very, very good point. But then again, it could kind of fall on the line of, you know, this is for once something that I would say the majority of the residents are somewhat asking for, or at least these sort of changes. Now, that doesn't mean, okay, Oklahoma, the people at OKC say, okay, they want regulations now, let's ban trail cameras. No, that's not what we're saying. Please don't do that. But I think, what am I trying to say here? I think I lost my train of thought, dadgummit.
Down with the government.
Yeah, no. Anarchy. No, that's not what I'm saying. Son of a gun. Okay, yeah. Where I was going with that is you want to kind of adapt to the people who's keeping the hunting tradition alive, right? Like all the hunters are paying for the tags, licenses. So we're keeping this tradition alive. And so wouldn't you somewhat, now with the point you brought up in mind, wouldn't you somewhat kind of want to adapt to what the people want per se? Because what will these regulations do, right? They will probably, hopefully, increase the buck to doe ratio, obviously more bucks, but also bigger class bucks, which will make this state more desirable than it is to hunt. So maybe one day it could become that Kansas, that Iowa, that or whatever, where people can come here and shoot big bucks, and they're willing to fork over money just like we do. We pay $550 to put in for Kansas, or we hope to draw out for Iowa one day, or whatever it may be, where it comes more desirable and will profit more for that, in return, less deer getting shot because A, you know, only one buck tag, but also B, you know, people are also going to be unsuccessful even if they do put in and all that stuff. You kind of get what I'm saying here?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a double-edged sword. You know, you don't want any more regulations, but you do want the ones that we do have, you do want to help. And like we were pointing out with the one buck and the raising the rates, it all would help the state of Oklahoma in the long run, I do believe. Because, like I said, I think we have good enough people in the government here, at least a little more common sense than the places out west. I don't think we're going to get to that point, but I do think we do need to change something. With the deer in Oklahoma, man, it like you said, it's, and like you, we I don't know many people that fill all their deer tags, like you said, but then I know people that fill them the first weekend of rifle season. Yeah. So, I mean, there's with the e-check system and the way we have it here, I don't think they really have an idea how many deer are taken in Oklahoma.
Well, and that's, we actually had, I don't want to say any names because I don't want to like people to think we're holding them in a bad light, because that's absolutely not what we're doing. But their argument to that is Oklahoma has that resource. And so if they have that resource available, then they're going to allow, you know, that many deer to get shot. And so, you know, what's your rebuttal to that?
Oh, you talking about just the deer numbers being the resource?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
like, well, we have the resource, which the deer numbers, to sustain like all these out of state people flooding in and buying the tags. So kind of what's your rebuttal to that? That would be, you know, somewhat a good point.
I think we do. We do have the deer. Like there's no shortage of deer, man. I'm telling you, I've been to Illinois twice. I seen more deer in one afternoon here than I did in 2 weeks in Illinois. So we definitely do have the deer. And like we brought up earlier, you know, you got a good wheat field in January. There's 150 deer out there.
Yeah.
And so that's where they're getting their numbers from. You know, they're rolling through there, checking those fields and stuff at night and getting their numbers. But I think the doe, our buck to doe ratio is jacked. I don't care who you are. I'll argue with any biologist and I'll take you out and show you some places. But I do think we need to get that under control. And I think the one buck limit would really help that, at least for a couple of years. Now, if we go back to two later, that would be great. But I think one buck is plenty for here.
It's interesting too, because another rebuttal, my uncle always says, like, why punish people that hunt all over the state? What if you did regions, like five zones, right? You got your four quadrants and then your panhandle. And it's like, you can shoot a buck, you can get two bucks, but only one can come from each zone. So it's like, you hunt in Northeast, you might have to travel the Southwest, right? You're distributing that strain on the resource, maybe to somewhere else that has more deer or different deer. And the reality is, if you did that, most people aren't the kind of guys that are going to pack up and go 3 hours and go hunt somewhere else. So it's like, you're probably getting one buck. Reality. The only people that are going to get two are going to be those guys that are hardcore and want to push it.
Hey, yeah, I'm all for that. You know, I haven't actually thought of that, but it's like that, you know, in parts of the state with turkeys, you know, there's part of the state, you know, where you can only kill one turkey, or, you know, other places you can kill two. But I'm completely okay with that, man. If you're that hardcore and you want to pack up and you want to hunt down in the big timber in the Southeast, and you want to go all the way up to Woodward and hunt up there, I mean, more power to you.
Yeah. And there's not a one size fits all. I think you have to take a step back and say what's best for the resource. And then from a biologist perspective, what is best for the resource? The most bucks, the biggest bucks. I could tell you selfishly from a bow hunter, it's like the most bucks and the biggest. That's what I want, you know, like more 4 year olds.
And what's going to keep people interested though? Is it going to be a lot of small bucks, or is it going to be, you know, a decent amount of quality bucks? You want quantity over quality, or quality over quantity?
Right. And like I said, going to that one buck limit, you know, I know a lot of people who have went out opening day of a bow season, or the opening week of bow season, and they shoot the first thing that walks by. Which, I mean, like we went back to, if that's what you want to do, do it. But they shoot the first thing that walks by, they shoot a 2-year-old eight pointer. And then, you know, like, oh, I'm going to hold out for a big one, you know, the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you do away with that option. Okay. He just passed up four does to shoot that 2-year-old eight point. You know, if he didn't have that option, he's going to shoot one of those does. First, if you only got a one buck limit, you know, he's going to pass that little buck up. And if you're hungry, you want some freezer meat, I mean, by all means, shoot the does. You get six of them. So, I mean, you might as well fill those tags first before. But I think, like I said, most people really, realistically, people are only shooting two or three deer total. Buck or doe. So you do that one buck limit, and with all these doe tags, you know, October rolls around, man, I'm going to fill the freezer with a doe. Now I'm going to hunt I'm going to hunt a big buck. So that's the way I look at it.
Well, those big mature bucks got more meat on them too. So the meat argument's not there either, but that's a good point. I like thinking about the incentive structure and experience and what keeps somebody in it. Cause I've been scouting a piece of property here in Texas that's a draw hunt. And I walked out the other day and I saw over 100 deer. There were two wads, one wad of about 60, one wad of about 40. And when I saw those deer, I about dribbled down my legs. I was so pumped and I kept binoing them. And there wasn't a buck in that wad over 125, 100, maybe high 120s. And I was like, damn, I've seen 100 deer today and probably 20 bucks and not one over 120. And there were 60 does. I was like, some of these need to die. Like 60, 80 does. And there's just too many deer. They can't get big in that spot, right? And
yep.
It would make me a lot more motivated if I walked out there and it's like, all right, I saw 20, but damn, there was a couple big ones in there. You know,
kind of like bass in a small pond.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's just how I think about it. I'd rather see less and see a big one, but you know, that's not what everybody wants. Everybody can say, I don't care about shooting a big one. Oh, if a big one and a small one walked in, you'd shoot the big one. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that goes back to the baiting conversation from earlier. You know, where you're going to live by these morals that you're not going to hunt over bait. But if I showed you this deer and said, all right, but you got to go set my blind over a corn feeder. You're really gonna take that stance? You're really not gonna hunt over bait anymore?
Yeah.
Well, you see people that a lot of the comments that we get of, and I understand it. Like I've drove all across this country hunting deer and seeing deer in different environments. If you're from a state that you don't understand how other people hunt, like you just don't get it. That's your world. It's your perspective. You can't fathom hunting over bait or hunting with a dog or doing a deer drive, depending on where you're from. So I have empathy from that perspective, but what people don't understand in Oklahoma and this broad part of the South that baits, if you do not bait, you are behind. It's a necessary evil. And I don't want to. Like, I'd love to hunt in between these two bedding areas, one on my neighbor, one on me, and hunt a transition in between them. But if I was to turn my feeder off and I'd hear one 300 yards away go off in the morning.
And what would you do though? What would you do though? You'd be hunting that fence line trying to get him walking to the feeder. At least that's what I'd be doing. Because I did that on public.
Yeah, because I did that on public.
Yeah. Hey, exactly. I said you're still using that resource. And it's like back up north, man, you're hunting over. You know, you're hunting over beans and you're hunting over corn. Yeah, you didn't go out there and put it. Well, I mean, it was planted. But, you know, you can't in Illinois, you can't bait, but you can hunt over corn and you can hunt over beans. And like you said, so, I mean, a little bit of scouting, you figure out where those deer are coming out at and you're still hunting over food. I mean, whether you want to call it natural or not, you can. But I'll tell you a funny story about Illinois. And I mean, I hope I don't get anybody in trouble up there. But they have a store up there. They have all the same attractors in that we have at our store here in Oklahoma. I mean, crush, acorn, all that stuff sitting on the shelf. But it's illegal to bait in Illinois. So, I mean, I don't know what you're feeding that to. If you're feeding that to your cows or what you're feeding that to, they have all the same stuff in the store. Yeah. All the same stuff in the stores and half of it's gone. So, I mean, it is what it is, I guess.
Well, that's the same thing. I've heard that in Pennsylvania. It's like you can't bait, but they sell deer corn at all the stores. It's like, for what? Well, just the people that are traveling through going to Ohio. It's like, come on, dude. People are baiting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now I get the areas that
government.
Yeah. I understand the people that might be from like CD or CWD areas, or maybe, you know, those high disease prone areas where it's like baiting is kind of like a hub to spread all that. But I mean, if again, kind of like Christian said, like, if that's not really your, if that's not really your habitat with that you have to deal with, then, you know, it's kind of irrelevant to talk on other people's.
And, you know, people in probably out West, you know, those people, they have, they can't fathom, you know, like what we do. You know, we just sit in a tree stand all afternoon and hunt over a pile or hunt over a little food plot, you know, and like I said, different parts of the country. People out West. Oh, did I lose you?
Oh, you're here. No, I heard what you're talking about out West.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, I went out to we were just north.
Oh, can you hear me?
Hold on.
Yeah, can you back out and then rejoin? That might help reset the connection. Well, heck, freaking Biden's America.
It's the government. They knew we were talking crap.
You there?
Yes, sir.
Sorry, nice. Dude. Living in Biden's America, they're trying to shut us off.
Man, I don't know what we said. we said Colorado too many times. I guess, man. They
said, shut us down. Triggered. Yeah. What were you saying about Colorado?
No, we went out there elk hunting. Me and some buddies went backpack, just hunting on our backs out West. And we were down in Chama and New Mexico. And we were just in this restaurant talking to some guys from other hunters from there. And yeah, we were talking about it at the house, how we hunt. And man, they were just blown away. They're like, man, y'all see that many animals? Y'all see that many deer? We're like, oh yeah, it ain't nothing. See, you know, 20 deer a day. Yeah, they couldn't believe that. They also couldn't believe, you know, that we're sitting there hunting over a feeder.
yeah. Hilarious. You see that picture floating around Facebook that, you know, has different body types, right? Like, you know, the West hunters have like 8-pack, and then, you know, you have the whitetail guys usually have a big old beer gut. And then, I mean, that's very true.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life is elk hunt. Yeah. And I thought I was in decent shape when I left the house. I was proved wrong within about 3 hours.
Me and Jake went, it was just taking your bow on a hike. It wasn't even hunting. I wouldn't call it a hunt.
Yeah, I was about to say that was a donation to Colorado is what it was.
Hey, I donated. I've donated several times, man. I feel your pain.
I've donated a friend of mine who's, twice.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead. All right, he gets back in. We'll wrap her. Can you hear us?
Yes, sir. You got me.
All right. Yep. Yeah, cool. All right. So, man, we appreciate you doing this. It's really fun. We love talking to people about big deer, especially abnormally big deer that we'll never probably ever shoot, but it's cool to have buddies to do. So,
thank you.
For people that want to keep up with you and see, you know, your future hunting journeys, what you're going after, and you kind of restarting your hunting career per se, where's the best place for them to keep up with you?
Ethan Kyle One, pretty simple.